Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast. It's the 21st of February, 2018, episode number 999. Tomorrow, for the 1000th episode, I have a very special guest, a US self-made billionaire, and he came from very modest backgrounds. He's well known on TV in America. He's highly respected, and he talks about many things from Trump to Brexit to cryptocurrencies and how he thinks he made it from being skint to become a billionaire. He's a very nice guy, and we chatted about 25 minutes, so that's on tomorrow's podcast. On today's podcast, I have Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, VRS, and Neil discusses the medical technology collaboration announced today to develop a range of graphene-based sensor technologies to enable the creation of digital bandages and wound dressings. Also on the podcast, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, XTR ticker, talks about the collaboration agreement with Omnia Mining for the exploitation of the hard rock gold deposits at their Manica mining concession in Mozambique. I also have Keith Alone, CEO of Powerhouse Energy, PHE, and Keith explains the significance of the MOU they've signed with Wright Bus Limited, a leading bus manufacturer whose products include innovative hydrogen-powered buses. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about Glencore. They had results out. And of course, it's a mark of how other people in that sector are doing. If Glencore's doing well in the mining and resource sector, of course, the sector's doing very well generally. Also, he talks about African battery metals. I had Roger, CEO, in yesterday from ABM. And also Kodal Minerals, KOD. Plus, I've got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, CEO of Vesarion, that's VRS ticker. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. I was going to say, it's been a while since you've, it's been a week or so, a couple of weeks since you've announced a deal, which is unusual, but yeah. Another one has come out, which is medical technology collaboration. We'll get to that in a bit, Neil. Before we do, for people not aware of Vesarion, I can't imagine many people are listening to the podcast, or regulars anyway, because you've certainly got a bit of traction in the last few months. Just explain succinctly what Vesarion is all about, please, if you could.
Okay, yeah, so founded 2011, we're an advanced materials company specializing in exploitation of new materials like graphene and its sister materials. So we've announced several really good pieces of news over the last couple of months, and as you say, we've got good traction there.
Yeah, well, listen, you know, out of all people know about this, but you've had a huge sort of, agreement in China to create a sort of graphene park and all that stuff. And you've collaborated with some of the biggest names around the world that were into sort of, you know, who were looking to explore this graphene frontier. And now you've done a medical technology collaboration. So take us through this, because it's a little bit different, and it's about inks, isn't it? So take us through this, if you could, Neil.
Yeah, so this is the second agreement this year on inks. Obviously, we have the big clothing manufacturer that we talked about beginning of the year. But we only bought this business last year, and we're already announcing the second collaboration. This one is working with Chris. Anybody who does a quick search on Chris will find that he's a really interesting character. Can't wait to work with him. He's got a great pedigree. He's assembled a really, really good team. And this is an inks technology for sensors on external wound dressings. So this is quick to market, small company, right people around the table. Really looking forward to working on this. This is yet again a brand new sector. It's a brand new application. It goes to show how big the potential is for this technology.
Yeah, so it's basically the creation of digital band, like smart bandages and wound dressings, so it gives certain readings back. So explain that. Apart from that bit there, how will they do this? What's involved?
So the big thing is obviously we're living longer, we're having more joint replacements. People, sometimes they do the physio, sometimes they don't do the physio, sometimes things don't quite go to plan. And this enables doctors to know exactly what is going on and prescribe the best treatment for, post-op. It's much needed. Things like knee implants, people do the physio, but then they subject the knee to lateral loads, side loads, which they shouldn't do, and they don't really tell the doctor, and that can really affect recovery time. So it's all about improving recovery time. It's all about understanding what's happening to the patient, and it's linked to all of these new technologies, big data and AI and all of that. Effectively, the bandage will be able to tell the computer exactly what's going on and what physio you should be able to have. We're really lucky that we've got the right people around the table. I mean, anybody who does a quick search on the guys involved in this project and named in the project will see that they are literally at the front of this technology.
Yeah, so trials will take place in the internationally renowned Adam Brooks Hospital in Cambridge with an orthopaedic surgeon there called Dr. Aman, and I won't pronounce his surname, but it's worth doing a search there. So how long will this trial take place, and what's the outcome, hopefully?
We don't know how long the trial's going to take place. We're still forming the project plan over it, but in a business like ours, we need big strategic contracts, which we've announced already, those kind of, the big chemicals companies and the big consumer goods companies. But then we also need smaller projects, which are much quicker to market. These are solving problems that already exist. These guys want to do this, and they've just got no way of being able to do it at the moment. And that means that we can just run that little bit faster. We're still a small team, and people have got to understand that, we're literally pushing everybody to the limit at the moment. The Chinese deal, is massive for us. People just don't give you, or set up projects with £55 million worth of investment, on the back of a fag packet. Yeah, we've got to work really, really hard. We've also got to do a really good job of protecting the business, making sure we control that IP, making sure that all of the promises are in place that we've had. And that can be an exhausting time. You've caught me. I'm actually taking a couple of days rest. I'm out in Cuba at the moment. So I'm just looking at the blue skies and then when I get back, I'm straight out to Israel on a government mission. I'm back from Israel, and we're out to probably South Korea, and then we're out to Hong Kong for the Great Innovation. And that's going to be a big event for us. That's going to put us right in the right place with Chinese investors, Chinese producers and manufacturers.
It is a busy time, but it's nice to hear you taking some downtime, because that is essential. I know when I've talked to you, you've been everywhere. You've been in America, and it's been in the wee hours of the morning, and you've been getting lack of sleep. So it is actually nice to you trying to recharge your batteries. But I know if you're anything like me, and I mean you are obviously a thousand times busier than me, a holiday, I'll go for a week. It'll take me sort of 4 days to sort of get my head off the markets and unwind a little bit, and then it's almost time to go home then. But I'm relaxed. It's like,
Cuba's a great place to come because there's hardly any Wi-Fi. We're pretty lucky to be talking now, to be honest. I've had to beg, borrow and steal to get this Wi-Fi connection. But it's a good place to come. It's been tools down, not been that active on Twitter, as people have seen. never slept so much in all my life, and fully recharged to come back and hit this really busy period.
Yeah. And just one final thing on this medical technology collaboration. I mean, the potential here at the moment, maybe people can't see it, but I suppose the commercial potential is huge, isn't it? Because data is massive. And do you know one thing, and it's probably an odd analogy I'm going to bring in here, but all my life, I mean, like most people probably have tried to lose weight on and off now and again, you know? And I only did it successfully when I turned about 40. I lost about 2.5 stone, and I only did it successfully when I actually looked at the data, looked at what I was taking in. I got an app and looked at the exact calories I was taking in, the exact calories I was burning, and I did it. I lost 2.5 stone successfully. Never did that before in my life. And so this data management and using data can save people so much money. It can help accuracy and reporting. I assume NHS, it could save them millions, couldn't it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if we can crack this and we've got the right people around the table, then the implications for regular consumers, high-performance athletes, there's a lot going on in this field, and we're leading it. You know, we've got the University of Cambridge right behind us. We've got the University of Manchester behind us. We couldn't be in a better position to solve some of these big challenges.
Yeah, and do you know what? You mentioned it there, even with sportswear, and I know you work in that area too. But it is, you get to the stage now where professional athletes are so closely aligned to each other competitively, but even a tiny little fraction of a competitive advantage helps. And I know you sort of have had input into certain things that are going on in the Winter Olympics. And it comes down to that, doesn't it? It comes down to monitoring. And if you can get a split-second advantage over your competitor, that can be the difference between silver and a gold, can't it, you know?
Yeah, well, we can't comment about the Olympics at the moment, but, what we do know is that, this technology is out there now. Our technology, has been proven now. It is making significant advantages to a whole range of different applications. And, I'm sure there'll be a bit more news on that later on, Justin.
Marvellous. Listen, I know you're sort of you're borrowing someone's Wi-Fi there, because I know it's when we set up the interview, I did say, are you going to get Wi-Fi in Cuba? Because I know it's very bad there. So quickly, three quick reasons, if someone's not following the story now, why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please, Neil.
Okay, well, the first one is that we've now proven that we can get applications out there for this technology. The second one is that we have the right partners around the table with Innovate UK and the University of Manchester, University of Cambridge. And the third one is that, as I always say, that as the biggest shareholder, my aims and aspirations are all aligned to the other shareholders. So we keep a very close eye on costs, and we always maintain shareholder value.
Excellent stuff, and he'll get that factor 15 on and get next to the pool. Just relax and try and switch off for a couple of hours, because I know, like I say, you've got a busy few weeks, months, years ahead of you. But thanks for chatting, Neil. Hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. That's XTR ticker. Colin, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you.
I got some news out, and we'll get to that a bit. Before we do, Colin, I always like to do this for people listening to the podcast who are not aware of the company. Explain, what is Extract Resources all about, please?
Well, Extract Resources is a company listed on the AIM market. It's got a market cap at the moment of around about £8 million. Its key asset at the moment is the Manica project, or I think sooner the Manica project, the Manica area. Mm-hmm. We have a combination of alluvials, and which we're working, and a very substantial hard rock deposit, primary deposit, called Fairbride, which has been engineered and completed a DFS feasibility study. The numbers are well known. And as I say, we're consolidating the area and looking at other hard rock possibilities, which led to today's announcement. So in summary, a gold-producing company in Manica, which is just over the border, on a big greenstone belt which spreads between Zimbabwe and Mozambique.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, the news entitled Manica Hard Rock Collaboration Agreement. Explain this, Collins. I think some people may be a little confused here. So explain this, if you could.
Yeah, that's right. It needs explaining. First of all, the Manica interest for Extract was all about developing a primary mine. It could have been by a combination of underground and surface, or underground on its own with a small operation. And we settled onto a primary deposit of 7 years life, 35,000 ounces a year, which would possibly go on into quite a large underground project later. Mm-hmm. It was necessary to move the alluvials and also work alluvials, which were available in the area and considered by some to be above average. Mm-hmm. So the company embarked upon working the alluvials and announced sometime, I think last October, that we'd be working the alluvials whilst we awaited to finance around about a $35 to $40 million Ardrock project. So when we talk about Ardrock, we're talking about your conventional mine, where the numbers are easily understood, the distribution of the gold is easily understood. When you're talking about alluvials, you're talking about gold, which is quite random in its presentation, and so that therefore varies in the amount you get when you produce. So Ardrock, there's a distinct difference. We focused on what we call the Fairbrite, but our company has got several other occurrences in the region, in the Manica region within the concession. They're explored, they're fully drilled, and they're available for production. Omnia is assisting. We mentioned Omnia in our Ardrock announcement. They're working nearby, and they're working alluvials, and we've got a collaboration agreement on the alluvials. But this announcement today is on about joining our Ardrock deposits with theirs, because they've got quite a few occurrences which I've visited and seen myself, which have had some exploration, but very superficial, very limited, and are worthy of exploration. So what we've done is a collaboration agreement, but not based just on the fact that they've also got occurrences. They've got a really fine plant installed. Mm-hmm. It's state of the art, it's new, it is a really high standard. It's capable of treating 400,000 tons a year. And we've already had the geologists over their ground, and we've seen areas which are well worthy of exploration. And, of course, there are other areas outside both our areas which we're talking with others. So the collaboration agreement essentially says they provide their plant, mm-hmm. and we do all the exploration and feasibility studies to bring one or more, either on their property or our property, bring them into production. And of course, this is fast track. Fairbride is on the drawing board now, talking to financiers, joint operators. But this is fast track because, remember, we have, as I said earlier, we've drilled and know what's in our project. We've seen gold in their showings. And so it might well be that with a plant fully installed worth, I don't know, $7, $8, $10 million, we'll be able to get into production very, very early. This has to be good for our shareholders because they're looking at earnings from alluvials, which are growing month on month. They're looking for the Fairbride to be starting to build it. And they're looking that in the interim, we work alongside the alluvials. We work their plant for Ardrock, either in their concession, our concession, or a combination, and maybe even outlying areas. So I've been talking to our shareholders for a number of months now about consolidation, and we've been working extremely busy on doing just that. And Omnia, I really would like, in fact, I'll get some photographs on our website. There are some really nice installations in terms of workshops, maintenance facilities, the accommodation where the people live is quite frankly well above average for the industry and for the region. So I think we've got extremely good partners. We're working with them already. And so this collaboration agreement will be the how do we work our other Ardrock resources. Fairbride is being financed. Mm-hmm. We're having talks on financing and is well progressing. This can come in association with the alluvials. So we're very, very pleased. And we're still working very hard in consolidating the areas, and hopefully we'll be announcing not much of the same, but other additions to our company.
Yeah.
In Manica.
Yeah. And so it's working well all round, and of course, and you can't be too unhappy that the gold price is looking quite good, isn't it?
Well, that's right. I mean, the gold price is excellent, and looking, you know, I saw this morning that futures are up again. Mm. You know, when you're mining gold, you're mining money. You don't have to worry whether you can sell it. And our production is in our alluvials is on the increase nicely. We're having good days, extremely good days here and there. And it's raining, you know, and raining's always a nuisance. But we expect the rains to be finishing in a couple of weeks' time. So, no, gold price up, operations going well in the alluvials, this collaboration agreement, and we can finance it out of cash flow. It's not as though we've got to go back to shareholders for this collaboration agreement. Mm-hmm. We're actually collaborating out of cash flow. It's not as though we've got to go and access equipment. Omnia have got big excavators, so we can actually do crosscuts against these gold showings and our own gold showings. So we've got the plant, we've got the money. And we really, when we say fast track, we can fast track the exploration. And if it works out, we can fast track the production.
Marvellous stuff. Well, Colin, if someone's listening to this and like the sound of what you're doing there, but they're not following the story, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, we're in production already, producing gold. We've got a hard rock occurrence collaboration agreement now where we can probably be producing gold in another 6 months from that. We've got a major project, which has been the subject of a definitive feasibility study and is currently well in advance in terms of development and financing and development. And you, the last reason, the gold price is on the rise. So if you want to be in a metal, gold's not a bad metal to be in. And you're in a company which is concentrated and focused. So that's Extract. And we really, really are climbing into that focus in the region. I know sometimes our shareholders think, things are slow, but you know, in 4 months you can't move the world in 4 months, but I'll do my best to move it in six.
Marvellous stuff, Colin. Good to chat to you, and like I said, a lot going on there, so hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future.
There's a lot going on, and thanks for taking the time to interview me. I do appreciate it. Thank you very much indeed.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Keith Alorn, CEO of Powerhouse Energy. That's PHE ticker. Keith, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. It's great to be back here.
Yeah, well, I saw your RNS yesterday, of course, and I read through it, and it's quite a significant, I think, milestone for the company. And we'll go into that in a bit. Before we do, Keith, for people listening who are not aware of the company, can you explain what you're all about there at Powerhouse Energy, please?
Sure. Powerhouse Energy began as a typical waste-to-energy company, and waste-to-energy has really been a euphemism for many years for incineration. Real waste-to-energy and real capturing energy value out of waste is not achieved through incineration. It can only be achieved through advanced thermal techniques such as the one that we apply, which is ultra-high temperature gasification. In this process, what this has allowed us to become is the pioneer in the UK's hydrogen from waste industry. Mm-hmm. And that's an industry that's going to be growing by leaps and bounds over the next 2 to 3 years.
So you have this modular setup. So these are very portable machines, and you know, you will be having these, of course, and you've tested. So where are you at the moment in regards to these? I mean, obviously you've tested them and you've released results, but at what level are you on a commercial level? When can you start sort of you know, creating these and placing them where they need to be?
Got it, Justin. So, you know, as we said for, frankly, quite some time, we'll be breaking ground on our first commercial operation this year. We're in the planning and permitting process for our first commercial site up in the Northwest with one of our partners who has helped us identify an ideal site, that being Peel Environmental. And we've gone through, as you point out, we've gone through hundreds and hundreds of hours of testing and demonstration of our process demonstration unit to provide data that we've fed in now to both our pre-feed process, and that we're now engaged in our full engineering and design of the commercial unit. I would expect that we would be prepared to begin ordering components for the unit within the next couple of months. And so we've moved very aggressively. We've not just demonstrated, we've proved the concept. And we've proved the concept by virtue of taking effectively anonymous gas samples and sharing that gas analysis that has been independently verified by third party laboratories through gas chromatography, and shared those with providers of hydrogen cleanup equipment. And they've indicated that we can indeed clean our gas production to 99.999% purity, which is the equivalent of road quality hydrogen. And road quality hydrogen as a fuel is the demand for that is growing immensely. If one looks at the Hydrogen Council that was created at Davos in Davos, Switzerland about a year ago, these guys have, including Toyota, Hyundai, Honda, BMW, and Mercedes-Benz, five major transportation providers, these guys have committed over 10 billion euros to the outfitting of the hydrogen economy in Europe over the next 3 or 4 years. Now, our MOU yesterday with Wrightbus is really kind of the first step in the company's engagement in this hydrogen ecosystem. The reality is we believe that early adopters and early users of hydrogen fuel cells, mobile hydrogen fuel cells, are going to be people who are involved in industrial transport or in public transport. TfL in London has I want to say 15 hydrogen buses on the books now. Birmingham has hydrogen buses on the books. We're looking at cities throughout Europe, throughout the EU, as beginning to replace their old and dilapidated diesel fleet of buses, and they're not moving to battery powered buses. And the reason they're not is because batteries are a heavy commodity. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to move more people, you want to do it in an efficient way, and in a consumer vehicle, the battery pack is going to weigh 3 to 5 times more than a fuel cell would. And so so to make things more efficient, local councils are interested in bringing in hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. The key to that is how do they get the hydrogen? Not how do they get the fuel cells, but where do they get the hydrogen from?
Yeah.
Because the reason they're bringing in fuel cells is that they recognize that diesel is a massive polluter, that the particulate matters that are released in the combustion of diesel are creating significant health problems for people throughout the EU, and in fact, there is being heard tomorrow in the Supreme Court of Germany a case on whether or not local councils can outlaw diesel vehicles during certain days when there's heavy pollution, and if that happens, that's going to change things remarkably quickly and remarkably dramatically. But the fact is, all of these vehicles that are moving into, or all of the councils that are moving into hydrogen, are still a bit of a conundrum about where they get hydrogen in a green and clean manner. Because 95% of the hydrogen that's produced today is produced through SMR, steam methane reformation. We've talked about it before. But that SMR generates 16 tons of CO2 for every ton of hydrogen that one is creating through SMR. Our process, the PHE-DMG process, the process that allows us to bring the solution to where the problem is, that allows us to use distributed modular gasification and take plastics, waste plastics, and end-of-use tires and extract the hydrogen from those things, allows us to generate 1/16 of the CO2 that is generated through traditional means. Now, the only other mechanism by which hydrogen can be created is electrolysis. And electrolysis is a substantially expensive process in which to engage. And the vast majority of electrolysis is being powered by brown coal energy that's simply moving the CO2 footprint from the power station to the point of electrolysis. And so the solution that we found that we believe is the most economically friendly and the most environmentally friendly and the most efficient, and by the way, eradicates a significant scourge on our planet, which is waste plastics that are finding their ways into streams and rivers and streets and oceans and our food system, the food chain. We are the only solution that takes care of all of those components of the equation.
Yeah. Well, take us through exactly what does it mean in this MOU signed with Wrightbus, which is a leading bus manufacturer. What does this mean? I mean, you know, what does it entail?
What it entails is us working far more closely with them. We're in the process of defining a definitive agreement by which we can operate on a worldwide basis with them. As I mentioned, there are cities throughout Europe that are looking at replacing 400 and 500 buses in their cities at a given time over the next 5 years. And so what this relationship with Wrightbus allows us to do is to be heavily involved in providing a city with a turnkey solution. So if a city wants 50 buses, they also want a mechanism by which they're going to fuel those 50 buses. Yeah. And there is not a city in the EU, nor is there, a city in the UK that doesn't currently have a waste problem of some sort. We can solve the waste problem without a smokestack, without creating incinerator-like particulate matter and all of those kinds of things. We operate in a closed cycle system. We can extract the energy value from any waste source, but our primary focus is in plastics and eradicating plastics from the waste stream. And we can generate road fuel quality hydrogen by doing that. And so by coming in and offering a turnkey solution to a city, we feel like that gives Wrightbus an advantage in the tendering process, and it gives us substantially greater visibility into all of these cities in the EU for which the EU is paying to have their bus fleets upgraded. The fact is the EU has the political will and it has the economic will to invest in making these things happen so that their people remain healthy. And so, this is one of the reasons that we've long focused on building relationships in the EU. We're in conversations. I was in conversations yesterday with people in Eastern Europe about specific projects that are looking very promising and very significant. And so by virtue of completing this commercial rollout of our first system this year, we expect that then to accelerate and snowball dramatically. After Unit 1, we're going to be looking at Unit 5, and then we're going to be looking at Unit 50 in a short period of time, because our intention is to be able to roll these off a factory floor and be able to distribute these modules where they're needed, to commission them. We would pre-commission them. We would then move them to the site at which they're going to be operating. And keeping in mind that all of these units generate electricity concurrently. So each of these units can be delivering over a megawatt of electricity, coupled with the fact that it's delivering hydrogen. And it's doing that while it's getting paid. Right, we're getting paid to accept a gate fee to take a waste product, and we're extracting the value of that waste product, and then we're selling on the real value, which is the energy component of that waste product moving forward. So it is truly a phenomenal business opportunity, and I think that people are going to need to hear the message over and over again, and then the penny is going to drop, and the hydrogen economy is going to start accelerating, and you're going to look back like we do now. We look back on smartphones, and nobody can remember a time when they didn't really have a smartphone, mm-hmm. But that was only 10 years ago, really. Right, 10 years ago, nobody would have imagined an iPhone, and today they're ubiquitous, and the ubiquity of hydrogen fuel cells being the cornerstone of the industrial transport of long-haul trucking, of buses, of fleets of vehicles that are operated by councils and by schools. All of those things are going to be happening with hydrogen fuel cells creating zero emissions on the road. And so that's what we're excited about.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you envisage? I mean, what do you envisage will be the sort of feedstock for this, for your units then, Keith?
So the units can run on any kind of feedstock, anything from literally MSW to RDF to SRF to mixed plastics to end-of-life tires, right? So the most difficult types of waste that countries are dealing with, yeah. End-of-life tires, right? And there are only so many football fields one can make with ground-up tires, and the rest of these things are being depoted, they're being stored, or they're being landfilled. And the fact is, we can extract the energy value. And by the way, when they're landfilled, they are degrading and slowly leaching into the ground. So we can extract the energy value from them. We can extract the carbon content from them, use that as pure carbon black, and we can deliver a hydrogen fraction to cleanly power the vehicles that need that that hydrogen. Concurrently, and I don't want this to get lost in the shuffle, concurrently we're delivering, with each one of our modules, we're delivering enough electricity to power a couple thousand homes. Right? So with each one of our modules, even though we're delivering a ton of hydrogen a day, which is enough to fuel 200 cars, even though we're delivering it, or 40 trucks, we're delivering a ton of hydrogen a day, we're still delivering enough electricity locally to be used locally in a green, efficient manner that is taking a local problem, which is waste, solving that problem and eradicating that and diverting it from landfill and allowing it to become something that is valuable again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what is the next sort of milestone in Powerhouse Energy's journey here, Keith?
I think the next milestone really is going to be the active ordering of the components, the completion of the commercial engineering. We're working on some of the back-end processes now. And the completion of that engineering process, it's been a aggressive, robust process, and in this past month we've been engaged in a very active, in fact daily, testing program up at the University of Chester Thornton Science Park with our research demonstrator and a couple of our engineers from Australia working with us to discern all of the energy values and all of the various components of many of the feedstocks that we're evaluating in terms of native plastics and mixed plastics and types of challenges that one might run into in those kinds of things. So all of that data is continually being fed on a daily report basis back into the engineering team. And which is enhancing the overall engineering design. So the engineering design is going to be completed. The ordering of the components is going to start within the next few months, and the planning and permitting process is well and truly underway. We're in phase two of that process now, and I would anticipate that. You know, we're looking at a significant milestone there within the next 30 to 45 days. So coupled with that, we're constantly fleshing out kind of the commercial repository of activities in which we're engaged. We're evaluating various long-term feedstock arrangements whereby people would pay us to take their feedstock, whether that be tires or plastics or RDF. And of course, we're looking at various arrangements whereby we'd be selling power locally in private wire scenarios through power purchase arrangements. So there is a lot going on with a very active team that's spread all about the UK and, in fact, through segments of the EU. And we've recently taken on some very interesting, or engaged in some very interesting and intriguing conversations with very large partners in Japan and in North America. So the next steps, the next stages for the company are all extremely positive, and we're wildly enthusiastic about where we stand. The fact is that we feel like we're one of the few companies that can actually do something to save the planet profitably. We can actually do something to eradicate plastics from our waste stream and extract the energy value in a way that's environmentally is sound and shows our environmental stewardship and still embraces the capitalistic nature of any endeavor. If we couldn't make money, then we can't save the world. And we've got to get out there show the investing community what the value proposition is behind Powerhouse, because it's substantial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, I want you to summarize all that, Keith, now into three quick bullet points. So someone listening likes the sound of this, but they're still not following you on Vox Markets. And if they do hit that follow button, by the way, anything you send will be sent to them via front screen of their phone, via notification. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
The three main reasons are that there are drivers in the market that are supporting the fundamental support for the Powerhouse Energy business model. The growing challenge of managing waste through the world, the growing challenge of electrical production in a distributed manner, in a distributed grid, and the growing demand for road fuel quality hydrogen being manufactured or being produced in a way that does not denigrate the earth on which we live. So I avidly support anybody following us and paying attention to what's going to happen, because we are committed to changing this planet.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous stuff, Keith. Good to chat to you. And like you said, lots going on. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks to you, Justin, too. Talk to you later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. John, thanks for coming back on.
It's always a pleasure.
You're a regular, and you're a man with a brain full of knowledge about the mining sector, and so that's why, I mean, of course, a lot of small cap stocks are in the resource sector because they have the potential, don't they, to sort of re-rate, you know, substantially, materially, because a lot of the time, what they have in the ground compared to their market cap is a disjoint, it doesn't connect, and that's why I like them. Tech and biotech, three sectors, I think, that have the chance to go crazy. But you mentioned just before you came on that Glencore had results out. Now, this is a sort of bellwether, I suppose, or it's a barometer of the sector as a whole. So how are those results, John?
Well, you're absolutely right. Glencore is a big marker for the industry. Mm. And they have produced a brilliant set of results. Net earnings of $5.8 billion, up from $1.4 billion last year. So that's a big turnaround, and not surprising, because metals prices did well last year, and Glencore were recovering from the debt crisis that they had back in 2015, 2016, when they were being aggressively shorted by some heavy-handed U.S. Hedge funds. And they got down to 63p, and it's nice to see them back up at £4. So that's that shows what even some of these big mining companies can do.
Yeah, well, I remember one that they dropped like 25% in one day, didn't they? Which for a big company is nuts. And like I said, they went down to 60-odd pence, and now they're literally, where are they? They're £4, £3.99. So that's a nice bit of return there for, you know, since I remember seeing that 2016, pretty much in 2 years. You know, a big cap like that has literally, do the math, they traveled pretty much quadrupled. Yeah. Yeah, amazing. So it's looking good. I mean, it's looking rosy. And of course, in this kind of environment now where, you know, we got a lot of sort of materials benefiting, we see this sort of growth in the electric vehicle sort of arena. They have to do well, really. If they don't do well, there's something wrong with the management or the debt, whatever. So that's good, I suppose. But let's move down the market cap scale. I did see a little video yesterday with Roger Murphy from African Battery Metals. And, of course, I had Roger on the podcast yesterday. What's your thoughts on... Because they just started, I know. They changed from Sula, didn't they, into African Battery Metals, and they're more cobalt-focused in the Democratic Republic of Congo. What's your thoughts on ABM, John?
Well, it's a completely different company from where it was.
Yeah.
It's getting rid of the assets in Sierra Leone. It's getting rid of all that legacy. It's now into the discovery of cobalt in the DRC. It's working in a good part of the Congo. That's nice. It's got licenses where there is existing copper cobalt production coming out of artisanal mining. And that's really good. That means you don't have to discover the materials. You know they're there. What you have to do as the next stage is figure out how much of it is there. What are the grades? What are the depths? What are the recovery rates? There's a whole bunch of parameters that we need to know in order to put proper valuation on these assets. And there's a methodical way of working through this. And I hope that they will start to give us the numbers that enable us to put real tangible value onto these assets.
Yeah. And I like the story of Roger, because I know he was at Ex-City, but now he's decided, he said he's done two podcasts when he first sort of renamed, got involved. And he said it's about time he became a bit more entrepreneurial, because he saw the opportunity there and he's grabbed it and he's put some of his own money in there. And I like that, you know. I mean, it's like having a pub landlord with his name by the door, you know. Your name's there and you're going to do it. It's not like it's just he's coming as a manager of somewhere. He is, you know, he really is standing behind this, isn't he, you know.
But it's not just Roger. Behind Roger are a whole bunch of other guys at a private firm called Madani Minerals. They are the chaps that have been discovering, finding the licenses, mm-hmm. pulling them together, working through all of that, and then they have put those licenses into Sula in exchange for shares. So everybody's aligned in the same direction. They're good quality people. They are an honest bunch of guys. There's a fabulous local metallurgist from the DRC who's working with them. And, you know, that is very good support for Roger to then sell to the rest of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so like you did say, there would be, you know, they've just started, but there'll be a regular news flow hopefully now, so we'll see what comes out of there. But like you say, the jurisdiction looks very good from a mineralization point of view, doesn't it? So that's good. Okay, so you know, you've been on, you've chatted about Kodal Minerals, and they've had a couple of good, releases of late, but the share price is doing nothing, which is quite frustrating. And I think yesterday they announced, that rather than talk about their lithium asset, which is going very well, they mentioned their gold assets, which is happening. And just take us through what they announced, John, if you could.
Well, two things on the gold assets. First is the results of drilling in Mali, where they've actually shown that they've got gold close to surface, very nice grades. I don't know if I want to call that a discovery right now. I think that's a those are very good showings. Sorry, they're in the Ivory Coast at the Niele prospect. But the thing is, when one works out the size and the scope of all of that, maybe that will turn into something of real tangible value. But it's looking very interesting for now.
Yeah.
The slightly less good news was that Resolute Mining pulled out of one of the licenses that they were in joint venture on.
Newcrest pulled out. I mean, Resolute.
Newcrest. Okay. Yeah. So that sort of thing happens all the time. These majors, they come and they go, and they have a quick look, and then they're off. If I was a shareholder, I wouldn't worry about that, frankly. I'm more interested in the fact that they've discovered very good grades at the Niele prospect. But really, let's not forget, Kodal is all about the lithium project in Mali. That's amazingly consistent as a project. It continues to produce good grades of lithium in drilling. It's very much like the project next door owned by Birimian Limited. Both of those projects continue to expand, continue to increase in potential value. Yes, I know the whole lithium sector came back a bit when SQM, the world's largest lithium miner, announced that it was going to expand its operations. Even when it expands its operations, we don't expect that will fill up that won't overproduce the market going forwards, because the market for lithium is going to expand so much, in our view, that there is room for almost everyone. Certainly we think there's room for everyone who can get financing to build their projects. So The big risk for all these companies is, well, where are they going to get the money to actually build the whole project? Mm-hmm. We know with Kodal that they've got a strong Chinese lithium processing group already financing them. There's a good relationship there, and we think that's going to be very helpful going forwards, although nobody ever completely knows.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, it's one of these companies where, I got to say, I do hold some stock then. I've written a blog on them. But, you know, they're just bumping along the bottom share price-wise. I'm thinking, well, hang on, they've released some good news of late. What's going on here? They've got, like I said, you've got the Chinese partner there, and they're in a very hot sector, and they're just short of 11.5 million market cap. I mean, which is nothing. You've got a bit of cash as well. I'm just thinking, what's going to make this move? But who knows? You know, John, who knows? But like I said, if they keep producing this and keep developing the story, then hopefully it will start to move, you know?
As I say, SQM in Chile deflated the whole sort of lithium bubble that was developing. I think it was rather well-timed, actually. Some of these stocks were getting a bit ahead of themselves. Mm. And I think this is a good opportunity for stronger companies like Kodal to actually work through this and gain better shareholder recognition.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent, John. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up next week. Thanks very much, fella.
Will do. All right. See you then.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Talao Energy, TLOU. At four, Lions Gold Limited, that's LION. At three, Frontier Resources, FRR. At two, Upland Resources, UPL. And a big fall yesterday, and people are almost trying to take advantage of the dip, maybe, it's UK Oil and Gas, UKOG. All right, top five most RNSs, most liked, by the way. At five, Main Energy, update completion of Galbraith number 48 workover. At four, Blenheim Natural Resources, BNR, update on Cobalt Blue Holdings investment. At three, Motif Bio, to present Ilkeprim, motivated to present Ilkeprim data at ECCMID 2018. At two, Vesarian Medical Technology Collaboration. I chatted to Neil earlier about that. And number one was liked RNS came from EVR Holdings. Melody VR signs agreement with Warner Chappell Music. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Don't forget tomorrow, the 1,000th episode, US self-made billionaire investor is a special guest.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want, with PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards, so you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.